Hello, and welcome to Radio Book Club on Radio Free Palmer 89.5 on your FM dial. I am Mary Ann Cockle, filling in for Judy Giddy while she enjoys a little time off. I hope you will enjoy the show today. Today we are joined by two guests. First, we have Sean Obie, a person I like to call our local Vonnegut scholar.
Hello, thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming. And our second guest is Carol Ryan Obie, a recently retired educator and a big Vonnegut fan.
Hello, I'm honored to be here.
Thanks to both of you for joining me on the radio for Radio Free Palmer's Radio Book Club. Before we get started, I want to remind our listeners that you can call in during the Wednesday noontime live broadcast and share your thoughts with us. The number to call in is 745-8900. Okay, let's get started. Today, we not only have two guests, but we will be discussing two books, both by Kurt Vonnegut. The first one is Sirens of Titan, and second, Player Piano. And Sean, you studied Kurt Vonnegut extensively in college. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What attracted you to Vonnegut, and what's his appeal?
Yeah, when I was at East Carolina University in North Carolina, I was studying in the English department, and I wrote my thesis on Vonnegut. And for that, I was looking at Slaughterhouse-Five, and I was writing it about it as a dystopian novel, which nobody had ever looked at before. It had always kind of been discussed as a humorous black novel and a war novel, but nobody had ever looked at it as a dystopian novel.
Something they call gallows humor.
Exactly.
Right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep. And so what attracted me to Vonnegut was when I was in high school, I hated to read. I would have never thought that I would study English. And then I read Player Piano and loved it. And so that really brought me into being a reader, and Slaughterhouse-Five then became my favorite novel, and I just knew that I always wanted to write something about it, and that led me to where I was.
Great. And Carol, I understand that you have read several of Vonnegut's novels, and what's his appeal to you?
I've read Slaughterhouse-Five. I've read A Man Without a Country, which is about him, about himself, and I've read Cat's Cradle. And I also read his book of speeches that he gave at graduation. I forget the name of that title.
Oh,
Sean, do you remember?
Yes, that's his most recent. I can't remember the title off the top of my head, though.
Yeah, but the only reason, and now I've read these two. The only reason why I've read Kurt Vonnegut is because Sean loved him, and I thought, well, I should read what he likes. So that is why I read Kurt Vonnegut. And once you start reading him, he really hooks you in.
I find that to be true.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
So as far as these particular books, Sean and I, we're the ones that picked them for discussion here. And we had a few reasons for picking them. Myself, I wanted to reread The Sirens of Titan because it was the first adult book I actually read. I also was not a big reader. My older brother had recommended it, and I just kind of picked it up and decided to read it and found that I actually liked reading. So, but just like you, Sean, it kind of sparked my interest in reading. I think I was just kind of not interested in the younger books, and so this was my first foray into adult literature. But I had not read. I read a lot of other of his books, but not Player Piano. And since it had been a little while since I read Vonnegut, I was happy to read one that I had missed. So I picked the first book, Sirens of Titan, and then asked Sean to pick the second one, and he chose Player Piano. And yeah. Why was that?
Well, I wanted to look at Player Piano because, you know, it's the first book he wrote, and there's a big gap in the writing of that to the writing of Sirens of Titan. And so I thought it would just be interesting to examine the first two books and kind of pick apart, you know, what happened between those two. And I thought that would make for an interesting discussion.
Yeah, they were his first two novels, 7 years apart. Yes. So, yeah, yeah, that was quite a spread for a writer.
Yeah, so, a typical gap, you know, would be 1-2 years or so. And right. So it is kind of a little unusual what happened with Vonnegut.
Right. So did he intend to be a writer? I mean, was his professional career to be a writer?
You know, I've read a lot of his autobiographies, too. And what he always talks about is that he had a fascination with writing from a very young age. But I think it never seemed like a reality at first. And then he published Player Piano, but it was more or less a failure. Nobody really was into it. And the sales were really bad. It didn't perform well at all. And so after that, he kind of gave up for a little while. He took other jobs, working as a newspaper reporter, working in public relations, doing other things that, you know, kind of honed his writing skills to a certain extent and, you know, found an outlet for that. But he really, you know, wanted to get back to fiction at some point. And
I'm surprised Player Piano didn't do well because it's a rather good book. But
I would agree. And yeah, at the time, you know, there was a fascination with futuristic dystopian kind of tales. So it is a little bit surprising that it didn't do better.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Carol, let me put you on the spot.
Sure.
Do you want to give us a real quick plot overview of these two books without giving away too much?
Sure. It's hard, but sure. Player Piano is about, there had been three wars, and the wars were over, and the machines and the engineers were really on top. We had total control of the country, and then on the bottom were the Reclamation.
Yeah,
kind of a labor corps.
Yeah, a labor corps, and on the or you had a choice going in the army, and it was all about how people lost their self-worth because they didn't have real jobs that they could be proud of, and how was society going to deal with this?
And when they joined the Reeks and Wrecks the army, it was not like a 4-year stint or 6-year stint. It was your life career.
Your life, yeah.
Right. And that was just determined.
Until you get pensioned off and the last years of your life.
Yeah. And so it was about self-worth.
Mm-hmm.
And Sirens of Titan, that's harder to explain.
The plot on that one does get a little bit rambling.
Yeah, it's about one person. His name is Malachi Constant, and about his life. And he was from Hollywood. He was rich and all that. And how his fate was changed numerous times from being in the army on Mars and going to Mercury, another planet, and just his adventures, and about the main person who seems in charge of all this, but he's really a pawn too, and his name is Winston Niall Rumford, and so it's about quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
So both are about quality of life
and free will. It seems
and
like both.
Free will, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything you'd like to add to that summary?
I think you did a great job.
Out there.
Yeah, yeah, and it's book. What I found interesting because I thought Sirens of Titan was written first because it was kind of out there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But then I found out that Player Piano was the first book, and so that was kind of a revelation for me. So then I had to rethink how I was interpreting these books. Yeah, Player Piano, his first book was written in 1952, and the second novel, in 59, so 7 years between the two. Player Piano had actually a different title when it got re-released 2 years after the original release. So, and John,
yeah, they kind of tried to rebrand it as a science fiction novel because it hadn't worked as a mainstream fiction release. And so they were trying to find a new market for it. So they released it under the title Utopia 14. And they gave it a real, like, slick-looking cover with bombs going off in the background and this kind of confused-looking but, like, very tough, you know, protagonist model on the front cover. And
the hero.
Yes, like the very attractive, you know, hero. And so they made it seem like a real adventure novel, which, if you've read it, there's not a whole lot of adventure. It's so they really tried to rebrand it and just were trying to sell it, like, in probably railway stations, stuff like that, as a pocket edition for people to just read while they were on their commute to and from work, that kind of thing. And then that's where they kind of tried to pigeonhole Vonnegut into a science fiction writer, was right with that cover. And
well, now that's interesting because the next book he writes is The Sirens of Titan, which the character goes from Earth to Mars to Mercury to, and they are doing space travel, and there's all sorts of, I mean, it takes place in space. So, and I, when I read it, I had the science fiction cover on that one, and it had planets and things like that on the cover. So it looked very much like a science fiction novel.
Sure.
So is Vonnegut a science fiction writer?
Well, at first I thought he was. Because you know, there's people being transformed. Rumford and his dog are being, like, you know, totally
teleported
to other parts of other planets. And
The Cronosynclastic Infundibulum, I believe.
Oh, very good, very good. And
you'll have to explain what that is, Sean.
You're
the only one that could pronounce it.
Yes, I read it many times, but
you know, I'm not even sure Vonnegut could explain exactly what that is. When Rumford he was an astronaut, and he's traveling through space, and he hits this, like,
oil slick in space.
I don't know exactly how to explain it, but it basically puts him in multiple places at the same time. Well, not necessarily at the same time, but he'll appear on Mercury for, like, 15, 20 minutes, and then he'll be back on Earth for, you know, that long amount of time, and then he'll be on Mars, and then he'll go to the moon Titan that orbits around Saturn. And so he's kind of in multiple places at the same time, more or less, you know, just a few minutes apart. And but he's also in multiple times. So he is in the future at the same point that he's in the past and the present. And
okay, back to the question. This sounds science fiction
to
me.
So, and all this going to Mars and space travel, and in Mars they have little brain inserts that control people, and so all this, and so Sean and I were talking about this last week about, you know, he's really a science fiction writer, but Sean did not agree with me on this issue.
No, I would say the main thing that sets it apart from science fiction is that typically when you have a science fiction book, they really try to explain how the science of what they're writing about would work. You know, even if it's not something that's currently viable. They look at the science literature that's out there and think, you know, how could that work? And Vonnegut doesn't do that. Like I said, with the, you know, the chronosynclastic infundibulum, he doesn't really explain it. He just says it's there, you know. And like with the flying saucers that they build on Mars, they are powered by the,
the some sort of infinite power.
Infinite will to become or, you know, right. something. So there is no, like, scientific force behind it. It's all just, you know, if whatever Vonnegut wants to happen, he just suddenly makes it appear. He doesn't worry about any kind of reality or ground, you know, in...
So there's no way to prove it's going to work.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
And I would say, you know, it... so you can maybe classify it in a bit of a fantasy genre, but I think even that would be a bit of a stretch because really the focus on that is so minimal, and it's mostly just kind of used as a vehicle to present his philosophy and ideas, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah.
And the humanity of his character,
sure.
I think, is so...
Yeah.
I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Radio Book Club on KVRF 89.5, and we have a couple of guests. We have Carol Ryan Obie and Sean Obie here discussing Kurt Vonnegut. The two books we're talking about are Player Piano, his first novel, and The Sirens of Titan, Vonnegut's second novel. So, and it is a call-in program, so if you would like to call in, share your thoughts with us. Give us a call at 745-8900.
I just wanted to go back to, we were talking about Vonnegut, whether or not he's a science fiction writer.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were talking about how they tried, his publisher tried to rebrand him as that with the covers of Player Piano, well, and they changed the title like we were saying, and The Sirens of Titan. And Vonnegut was very resentful of that. He always... hated the idea that people thought of his writing as science fiction.
Because that would be like pulp fiction.
Exactly. And that may have been part of it, is that he thought they were putting him in a genre that wasn't producing a lot of quality at the time. And
we looked at one of the covers, and it was 25 cents.
Yeah, exactly.
For the book.
Yeah.
So...
And so, you know, and part of it was he did want to be in the mainstream. He wanted to be a well-regarded, you know, personality. He wanted to be like a Mark Twain, that kind of thing.
So, is that why he dressed a little bit like Mark Twain?
You know,
the hair, the mustache.
I don't know if you could ever prove it, but I would say yes, that he really was trying to brand himself as that kind of... personality.
Uh-huh.
And like Mark Twain, he was a very successful speaker. He would go around to universities. He would go around and give lectures to, you know, giant audiences. And so in that way, he really was similar to Mark Twain.
And I don't know if, Sean, you might be too young, but Carol probably remembers. Years ago, there was something going around on the computer, on the internet, about the speech that Kurt Vonnegut supposedly gave to a graduating class and had all these things for, you know, future graduates, and it turned out all entirely to be a fake.
Right.
Do you remember?
Yes.
So,
yes. Yeah, they tried to credit Vonnegut with advice that he never gave.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, but, you know, imitation is the best form of flattery.
Yeah.
And so well, let's talk about the writing styles of these two books, because they are very different. And I personally like the writing style of Player Piano better than The Sirens of Titan, because it just seemed more well thought out style-wise, the way the writing went. I think it had more characters in it, and so that took some keeping track of and some sort of organization of that sort of information. And how about you, Kara? What did you think about the difference in the narrative styles of these two books?
Oh, yeah. because I have an old mind, I had to write notes. So I took a list of the main characters and player piano, and I have at least like 15 mm-hmm. here. Mm-hmm. And when I did Sirens of Titan, I have like maybe 7, you know, really important yeah. characters. And I started out reading Sirens of Titan, and that reminded me more of Slaughterhouse-Five in his style of writing. And so I'm like, okay, this is Kurt Vonnegut. I know this. You know, it's like Slaughterhouse-Five. But then when I went back and read Player Piano, I was like, this isn't like Kurt Vonnegut at all.
Right.
Who is this guy? You know,
right.
Who is he?
Paragraphs.
Yeah. Paragraphs and lots of thought,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, not as much dialogue,
right,
you know,
right.
And Vonnegut's pretty heavy on dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
and, but then after I got into it, it was fine, you know, but it took me a while.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of hesitant
mm-hmm.
at first and about halfway through, I'm like, yeah, I like this book. It's a good book too, you know? But the styles are totally not the same at all.
No. Well, yeah, it does. It almost seems like two different writers for
yeah.
sure.
Because you could open up both of these books, and the Player Piano has more dense wording on the
mm-hmm.
page, and
mm-hmm.
Sirens
oh, yeah.
of Titan, like say with dialogue,
right.
you know, it's more chopped up, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, and like you were talking about, Player Piano seems like a higher reading level. It's more. There's difficult words to understand that you have to go to a dictionary to look up. Like you pointed out, he uses Latin in some of the sentences. So it is definitely...
With no explanation of what
yep.
it means, so you have to go look it up.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, yeah, there was like an expectation of a certain literacy level that if you didn't recognize the Latin right off, then at least you... would try to look it up or find out what it was.
Yeah,
he used like three, three Latin phrases. And it turned out that they were very common phrases. It's just ones that I was not familiar with. He uses big words, you know,
mm-hmm.
what we might think of SAT prep words, you know, the
yeah.
ones that you
sure.
study but
sure.
don't necessarily use every day, that sort of thing.
I also noticed in Player Piano, when things happen, it was a lot slower. It just kind of moved along slowly.
Well, yeah.
And in Sirens, it was fast, and he was always throwing something new out, and the style was totally.
Well, in Sirens of Titan, you know, he jumps from a few planets in a matter of chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
rather than Player Piano, it takes him the whole entire book basically just to quit his job.
Right, right.
Right.
So.
A lot more physical movement.
Yeah.
In
yeah,
the Sirens of
definitely.
Titan.
Yep.
But we are doing intergalactic travel. And stuff.
Yep.
So, Sean, you had mentioned to me also that the Sirens of
mm-hmm.
Titan was the start of him developing a literary style.
Yeah, I would think so.
So what sort of, we talked a little bit about, you know, the short, more dialogue. And
yes, yeah, so it has, like my mom was saying, the more dialogue, it has the very short paragraphs that are basically just one sentence long, and one thing he likes to do is the onomatopoeia, which we were talking about last night, where he really likes to write out what inanimate objects sound like. So in here he has the machines, and he writes out Well, this actually, in Player Piano, he does it too. So that one actually goes across the board. But he writes out the sounds that the machines make. And then in Sirens of Titan, he writes out the sounds that a drum makes. You know, he does rented a tent, rented a tent, rented a tent.
Mm-hmm.
And so...
Now, in Player Piano, in the first book, the onomatopoeia were just sounds.
They were.
He was reproducing the sounds of the machine. But in the Sirens of Titan, he actually put words... to the sound.
Yes.
It was rent a tent.
I guess that's true. Yes. Yeah. So
true.
That is true.
Is
yeah.
that something more play on words that he started to do just for fun, I suppose?
Yeah, I guess. I think that probably was just, you know, it's just kind of his own whimsical way of, you know, just writing it out, I guess.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So.
So, and talking about his whimsy or his humor, as because Sean, you read the most number of these Vonnegut books, more than Carol or I have read. Did his, I mean, his satire in the books is obvious. Yes. Did it get more biting as he progressed?
I would say it does, and it probably gets more subtle, I would think. Like in Slaughterhouse Five, his most well-known, I would say some of the satire is largely missed because it is so subtle. But with Player Piano, there's not really a whole lot of satire there. It really kind of hits you over the head with the message. So I would definitely say his satire got more biting. It got more bitter, certainly, as he got older. He definitely became kind of a cranky old man and very bitter at the world. You can, especially with Sirens of Titan, you can still see, even though it is very, not very, but it is somewhat bleak view of humanity, it still does kind of have this hope for change, mm-hmm. hope for a better future, mm-hmm. which definitely towards the end of his life he didn't see, I would say.
Interesting. Yeah. What about Carol in the books that you've read?
Well, I was going to say, you know, it's kind of interesting how we looked at his sounds and how he continued it. I noticed in Player Piano, he uses, like in Slaughterhouse Five, he uses, and so it goes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and so, yeah.
Goes.
Yeah,
and so it goes. He says that over and over again. In Player Piano, him and his, Paul, the main character, him and his wife kept saying, I love you, Paul.
Yes.
I love you, Anita.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of kept going through the whole book all the way. And who put emphasis on the you mm-hmm. at certain times. Mm-hmm. And it kind of reminded me of Slaughterhouse, you know, that continuation where mm-hmm. he uses the same term over and over again in a book.
Sure.
That's kind of an interesting thing you picked up on because it is significant when that phrase changes towards the end of the book. Not going to give it away, but sure. So it's something that becomes ingrained in the reader.
Yeah.
And then just a subtle change towards the end,
sure.
and you realize what had been happening and what's going to happen from now on. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Well, and I would say we were talking about style, and I just wanted to mention that I think Player Piano was very imitative in style. It was like a lot of other books that had come before it. It reads a lot like 1984 or Brave New World.
Fahrenheit
451, exactly. Mm-hmm. Books like that. You can kind of just plop it square down in the middle of those, and it reads very similar. So I think with his first effort, he didn't really know what he wanted his voice to come across as, you know, as a writer. And he was just kind of looking at books that he respected and trying to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I think that very much comes across.
So I am, just to remind listeners, I'm Mary Ann Cockle, substituting in here for Judy, who's our regular book club gal. I'm here with Sean Obie and Carol Ryan Obie. You are listening to Radio Book Club on KVRF 89.5. It is a call-in program, so if you have any thoughts you'd like to share, just give us a call, 745-8900. So, and we are discussing Kurt Vonnegut today, two books in particular, Player Piano and The Sirens of Titan. I'm going to go back to Sean here, our expert Vonnegut scholar in Palmer. Sean, can you give us a little background of where the idea for Player Piano came from?
KVRF.
Oh, keep going.
Okay. Vonnegut did start writing Player Piano when he was working at General Electric. And the setting of Player Piano is Ilium, New York. And that's where General Electric had their main headquarters at the time, their main plant. And so Vonnegut worked there as a public relations person, and he would write basically their advertising for them. And working there, he saw what was happening with the machines kind of taking over production. And that's where the real idea for the novel germinated. And he started to think, you know, what is that doing to society? How is that impacting people's lives, having their way of life taken away from them, basically? And so that's really where he got the idea for that book. And this setting, it also appears in several short stories that he wrote at the time and had a big impact on his early writing. And also in the book, he went to Cornell, and that's one of the settings in the novel as well. So yeah, it's very grounded in his personal experiences.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking, he talks about in Player Piano, everybody has a punch card, has a mm-hmm. card that mm-hmm. was punched with all their information on it, their ID, all about themselves.
I'm still of the generation where we were identified by punch cards.
Yeah, and in World War II, which he served in, which he knew well, in Nazi Germany, the Nazis had punch cards for all the Jewish people, and had all the information punched on the cards, and they would feed those into computers and have lists of. What was your Jewish background in your family? How was it your mother's side, father's side? They had all this information on Jewish people. So I was wondering when I was reading if he maybe got information. Mm-hmm. And my mom, this little personal story, mm-hmm. but my mom became a key punch operator in 1955. When I won't say how old I was, but in 1955, when I was a little girl, and she became a key punch operator, mm-hmm. and so that was a big thing at this time, that you would punch instead of computers, you would punch the information right. On a punch card, and then you would feed these cards into the computer. They would read them and come up with all the data. So. Mm-hmm. In a way, to understand Player Piano, it helps to know when it was and that he's thinking from that period of computer
right.
technology compared to now. If you were writing the exact same book, it wouldn't
right.
be quite the same.
Yeah, memory was still on tapes in the
right.
book, and
right.
computers were vacuum tubes.
Right, yep. right,
yeah.
right,
yeah.
right.
And
right.
Since we're talking about the computer aspect, I thought it was funny, his computer... The big mainframe computer yep. that mm-hmm. runs everything right. was in Roswell, New Mexico. Mm-hmm. And it was called?
EPICAC.
Okay, yes. Got to get it right. EPICAC. And obviously, a pun on ENIAC, which was the big, real
right.
vacuum tube computer
right.
that
right.
the first computer.
Right.
But the basing it sound-wise kind of similar to ENIAC. But then it also sounds like Ipecac syrup.
Yes.
And so, which
right,
was, I thought, just kind of a funny, you know. And again, it's one of those literary levels that you have to know a little
yep.
bit about history
right.
Right. to kind of get the full humor of what he's writing.
Yep, for sure.
So then after Player Piano, 7 years later, we have The Sirens of Titan. And what about the ideas that brought this book into being? Because it's so dissimilar to Player Piano.
Certainly.
So 7 years, he's had time to do other stuff, mm-hmm. see the world differently. He had kids in between.
Yeah, I think
he had three
I don't
kids.
Think he had any kids when he wrote Player Piano, I'm pretty mm-hmm. sure. But yeah, I think he was starting to have kids when he wrote Sirens of Titan.
Yeah. Yeah, and he had his own children, and then he adopted. I briefly looked up. He adopted four more.
He did. He adopted his sister died of cancer. And I think this was actually a little bit after Sirens of Titan.
Oh, okay.
She died of cancer, and then Just a few days before she died, her husband was on a commuter train and it went off the tracks and he died in that accident. And then a few days later, his sister died of breast cancer, I believe.
Wow.
And they didn't even, I don't think they told her that her husband died. I think they just kept it a secret from her. And then they adopted their children. So they ended up with seven, that they raised. And I think maybe that did have something to do with it not being so grounded in reality, perhaps. He, with all these kids, he was at home a lot then. And so it did give him more time to come up with something, I guess, a bit more fantastic.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Some of the ideas that are prevalent in Sirens of Titan, we mentioned before, free will, controlling our own destiny. But we haven't talked about the religion. And there is a religion in the Sirens of Titan. And it is, Sean, what's the full title of it?
It is the religion of God, the utterly indifferent. And it basically, it takes the idea that, God looks at certain people with favor and presents them with good luck in their life and riches. And people that are not in God's favor are the poor people of the world who, are barely scraping by. And so it takes that theory that success is, something that is a gift from God and says that, no, God doesn't care about anything and is just indifferent.
And I think he mentions that, how could God really be watching out for all the people on the planet and the rest of the universe?
Yes.
He doesn't have time for all that.
Yeah.
And he probably isn't that tuned into everybody.
Well, so. And you're not supposed to go around and say, thank God.
Right.
Yes.
Because what's God's up there wanting to be that, it's very interesting. When I was reading, I was like, religion in here. I don't believe it. Yes. How can that be?
Yeah. And I think he said God is busy taking care of himself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the rest of us, it's just up to luck. Yeah.
What Malachi Constant, the main character, always liked to say, because, he came from this privileged background, he would always say, somebody up there likes me, meaning God, of course.
Right.
And so that's where Rumford kind of got the idea for the whole thing in saying that, nope, nobody up there cares about what's happening.
So he was not a religious person. Is that right? Vonnegut.
Yes. He didn't practice organized religion. I think he always wrote a lot about Jesus. I think he believed in the teachings of Jesus, but he referred to himself as a humanist, and basically that school of thought just says that you don't think too much about any eternal reward or punishment, and you just want to be the best person that you can and do the best for everyone who you meet on earth just for the sake of being a good person. And that's really what inspired a lot of Vonnegut's thinking.
And Carol, do you think that came across in the book?
Oh, yeah. What's interesting, he really talked about, do we have free will or are things mapped out for us that we don't know and we just go down this path and we're kind of pushed that way?
Is it just dumb luck?
Yeah, or is it luck?
Yeah. Where you just happen to be at the right place at the right time.
Yeah, and he really, he doesn't talk about it. He just has his people experience this, his characters. It's interesting.
So does religion play a part in other novels as significantly as it did in Sirens of Titan?
I don't know if religion exactly, but he always was interested in the idea of free will. That comes up again in Slaughterhouse-Five is probably the big one where that comes up. And Billy Pilgrim, he always has the saying, that which my mom mentioned earlier, so it goes. Mm-hmm. And basically just this idea that you can't control anything. You know, it's just it's always going to be that way. So he just kind of shrugs everything off with that saying.
Okay, sera, sera.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then Timequake also deals with that same question. It's the plot of that novel, just real quick. It's everyone is forced back in time to 10 years previous, and they have to just watch what they did, like a movie, basically, for that whole entire 10-year span, and they can't do anything about it. They, you know, any mistake that they made and that they would want to correct, they can't interact. They just have to watch. And so it kind of deals with that question as well in that one. But it was something he always did like to grapple with, you know, how much control of our lives do we have? And it was something that kind of nagged him throughout his writing career, I would say.
Very good, very good. I was curious about the religion aspect evangelists at the time. You know, we have evangelists, televangelists, and some characters currently in our society. I just was curious if, I don't know when they started, I don't know the history of all of that, but I did look up Billy Graham, because he's a big name. He did start his evangelical association in 1950, and Vonnegut's book came out in 52, and so I was just wondering, maybe that was in his mind as well. It's just a possibility. I don't know if we have an answer to that, but...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, of course we don't have an exact answer, but I would say certainly. I think a lot of his teachings are kind of being looked at in this novel. And Rumford, you know, is that same kind of personality as a Billy Graham or Joel Osteen, or, you know, modern. But he really puts on a performance when he's preaching in his religion. And
even he was on a scaffold as if it were a pulpit.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. Yep. Yeah. Yep. For sure. And he's kind of that smiling, you know, perfect white teeth prophet kind of thing. For
right.
sure.
Right. So I just want to remind our listeners, you're listening to Radio Book Club on KVRF 89.5. I'm Marianne Cockle, sitting in for Judy while she's out on vacation. Today we're talking about Kurt Vonnegut and a couple of books in particular, The Sirens of Titan and Player Piano. And our guests today are Carol Ryan Obie and Sean Obie. And it is a call-in program, so if you would like to share your thoughts with us, just give us a call, 745-8900. We have a write-in. A listener wrote in, Vonnegut wrote these two books in the 50s during the Cold War. And how do his themes resonate now in our time, in the 2010s, perhaps related to terrorism and things like that. Was he prophetic about?
Well, I think certainly with Player Piano resonates more now than it did at the time. You know, computers have become such a big part of life that a lot of jobs that were still around in the 50s are gone. And so I think certainly, yeah, that book, I would say, definitely resonates even more now. And like we were talking about with Sirens of Titan, you know, if anything, those televangelists have gotten even bigger, have had more influence than they did in the 50s. So sure, yeah, I definitely think they do.
Yeah, I also thought that, especially in Player Piano, if people would have listened to him back then, but in the 50s, everybody loved their jobs in the factories and had their jobs and worked in steel plants and had all these careers going on, and if they would have listened, they would have seen where it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And that their factory jobs weren't going to be their factory jobs anymore. Machines were going to be there to take over. And now we have to find new jobs and new ways of having people work, having people have self-worth in their jobs,
mm-hmm.
Which was a big issue in the book. And, right.
And they went, the workers were able to get luxuries, like everybody had televisions, and their life was supposed to be easier, but unfulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. And all of what house they lived in and what television they had and everything was controlled from above.
Right.
Well, yeah, there basically was no choice. It was like, if you're at this income level, you get this house, you get this furniture, you get, you know, this health plan, you get this, you know.
Right.
And basically at the end of the day, they just got, you know, well, end of the week, they got like $30 take-home pay.
Mm-hmm.
That was what they had to choose to do with was just that $30.
Right.
Well, and I think he's foreshadowing that people are going to watch television.
Mm-hmm.
And television is going to be the opiate of the masses.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's going to keep people controlled.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked out like that. I think so.
So there's the government or the big organization that controls everything, and the National Security Administration, like we have now.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
A little bit related there, I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Well, and something that was interesting about the book is because it was a very capitalistic-driven society, but at the same time, it was fascinating that it also was very socialistic.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't leave anyone without some sort of income, you know. So even if they couldn't become an engineer or manager, they still had a job working for the Reichsgericht or the army, and they still did get a house. They still did get health plan. So I thought that was interesting.
But those jobs that they got in the Reichsgericht, there's, you know, 20 men on the crew
for one job.
But they're just there so that they could get a paycheck, and it was socialistic, you know, that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was, but it showed that those people weren't happy because they really didn't have a job that meant anything.
Right,
yeah.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And same with the army.
Yeah.
They had wooden guns with no bullets.
Yeah, they had
and they would just march up and down the parade ground, and that's about all they ever did. And that was a career for 30 years.
Yeah.
So, but they got a paycheck for doing nothing. So, in The Sirens of Titan, which is the first book, topics and names are brought up that appear in subsequent stories and novels and even a play that he had written. There's a short part in the book that mentions handicapping people who have physical advantages, such as strength or beauty.
Yes.
And Sean and I were talking about that a bit. I couldn't figure out what the point of that little episode was in that book and how it related to the rest of the story.
Mm-hmm.
But then as we discussed it, we figured out that this was possibly an idea that came to him during the writing of Sirens of Titan. And then this is something he elaborated on later on, filled it out and made it into a bigger part of a different story. And he seems to do that a lot. He's got characters that reappear, minor characters that get developed into full-on characters, but these stories are not considered sequels.
Yeah.
And they're not even considered spin-offs. They're standalone, but they've borrowed a character that was created somewhere else. And so minor characters, locations, episodes become filled out and become major components in later books. And I find that this is different from what we are seeing in recently published serial stories, you know, the trilogies and such that we see.
Mm-hmm.
The modern day ones seem to have spin-offs from the original story of these minor characters, but the point seems to be more to capitalize on the popularity of the writer and not necessarily to develop the story. And that's kind of an opinion of mine. So, Carol, Sean, do you have any insights into that? Have you read modern day serials?
I would, yeah, no, I definitely agree. Vonnegut, he always would have recurring, like you said, recurring characters, recurring ideas that he would bring back and work with again. And you can, in a certain extent, you can read them as a series. Like with Breakfast of Champions, the same characters come back in Deadeye Dick and in Mother Night. The main character in that novel comes back again in Slaughterhouse-Five. So there is kind of this repetition of these characters popping back. But like you said, it isn't meant as just a gimmick kind of to sell more books and to string people along for a three-book series. It is kind of a, I would say it's a higher, well, I don't know about higher, but it's a, it is just kind of a way to test out ideas and to try them out again and improve them, I would say. Mm-hmm. Certainly.
Did you want to say something on that?
No, I know in Harry Potter, isn't she doing a whole new series on one of the characters from the books.
Mm-hmm.
And she already did that. She already did a little book of that. Oh, what was it?
Tales of Beetle Bard.
Or something. Mm-hmm. So she's doing it like that, but then she's doing it to keep her book going, you know, in other directions.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. We have another write-in question. So how do we evaluate Vonnegut's impact on other writers, on our modern-day writers, and then also on readers, those of us who have read him?
Well, I would say certainly he influenced a lot of writers who came after him. I mean, it would be hard not to. He was a major figure. His style, I think, is largely gone. I don't know. Can you think of anyone who does have a similar writing style? I'm trying to think of another person who's come after him that I really felt, you know, this is somebody writing with Vonnegut's style.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah, I think there is somebody, and it's just not coming to me. But do people read Vonnegut?
I think
days?
So. I mean, working at a bookstore, certainly we still sell a lot of Vonnegut books.
Mm-hmm.
And I always have them on my recommend shelf. And if somebody comes in looking for something and they just don't know what they want, I always say, you know, well, you can try Vonnegut. And
you have so many topics to choose from with Vonnegut, too.
Sure.
So you can tailor it to the customer. One author did come to mind. It's not Richard Adams, it's the other one. Douglas Adams.
Oh, yes, that's certainly
Hitchhiker's Guide.
Yes.
To the Galaxy.
That's a good
point. I think he does credit Vonnegut openly, right? I think he does.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah.
Sean, when he was young, and I think in high school or after high school, but he had the story that he had gone to the post office and he had his book Breakfast of Champions on the passenger side, and somebody pulled up next to him, and this lady was just so excited that he was reading Vonnegut. I mean, it's like when you read him, it's like you're a member of a cult, kind of, you know. maybe not a cult, but everybody understands that it's a different style, it's a different way.
But there is an inner club.
It is
feeling,
and you understand. You go, oh yeah, you read Kurt Vonnegut, you know, and it's you have an identity of your own when you.
And that's interesting because there are people that I have come across and. They might be browsing the Vonnegut section at the bookstore or however the topic comes up. And it's usually Sirens of Titan for me. It's like, oh, you've read that one? Because it's not one that people typically read,
Right.
it being one of the earlier ones. And so there is kind of this club of mm-hmm. people sure. who have read Sirens of Titan, and we all just gush over it. And so it's kind of like a secret handshake in the Vonnegut Reader Society.
Well, that's true for sure, yeah, because you do have his more obscure titles. I mean, like Slaughterhouse Five, most people have read that, I would.
And sometimes it's a school reading.
That's it's required reading at a lot of schools. But yeah, with something like Sirens of Titan, that is just kind of the next level a little bit if you keep on going and digging and find that one, yeah.
Of the secret club of Vonnegut.
Yeah.
Right. So this was something that I just, the alphabet thing was just kind of a curious thing that I found in Player Piano, just a literary technique that I thought fascinating and kind of a puzzle that he, I don't know if he intentionally did it. I mean, he's not alive for us to ask, mm-hmm. and I haven't found any research on it. But, Carol, I don't know if you noticed that mm-hmm. all the letters of the alphabet are represented in the names of the characters. And so then I thought that's why he had so many characters, like you mentioned. You know, he had to have at least 26 to go through the alphabet, and sometimes it doubled up. And I thought it was just kind of curious. And I wasn't keeping track until I got towards the end and realized, And then I noticed. Then I went through the alphabet, and I noticed that he was missing the N and the V and the X, Y, and Z. And then, sure enough, the X shows up as the person's code, and then the Z shows up. Because I was wondering how I was going to get the Z uh-huh. in, but that does show up. Mm-hmm. And then the mm-hmm. N and V turn into Von Neumann.
Von Neumann. I was looking at my list.
Yep. And then he did go through a list of, he did list out machinery and components and things. And sure enough, that was alphabetical. And what was missing was, again, the letter Y. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And you, Sean, you had a little catchy phrase for the Y.
Did I have a catchy phrase? Yes. Well, I think, what it just came down to was that they were developing all these machines and they weren't stopping to ask why, you know? So that's just kind of what Vonnegut was trying to get across, is that they should have had some time for self-reflection to think, you know, should we be developing just for the sake of development or, you know, mm-hmm. So basically, I think that is where the why did come into it. And that really comes in with one passage of the novel towards the end. And Paul, the main character, and his best friend in the book are talking about their days as younger engineers, and they're talking about how happy they were developing all these machines. And one thing Paul says is, I never looked up to notice anything else, when they were doing that. And then his friend Ed says, most fascinating game there is, keeping things from staying the way they are. And so there really was none of that why. Nobody ever asked that question. And so, yep.
So, yeah, that's... And as I got to the end of the book, that's kind of how I felt, too. Mm-hmm. It's just people just did what they did. Mm-hmm. So, well, I want to thank Carol and Sean and the write-in person for joining me today on Radio Book Club as we talked about Kurt Vonnegut's first two novels, which were Player Piano and The Sirens of Titan. Judy Getty will be back next month for the August 27th show. The book selection that she has chosen is Margaret Sanger, A Life of Passion. The author is Jean Baker. And her guests will be Carol Koliatko from Matsu Public Health. And I have Ashley, and I don't have a last name. I'm sorry, Ashley. So it will be Carol and Ashley. And a reminder to our listeners, Radio Free Palmer is a community station that relies on support from listeners like you. So please take the time to visit our website, radiofreepalmer.org, and consider becoming a contributing member. If you are interested in joining a local book club or starting one of your own, please visit your local public library or independent bookstore and ask the staff. They'll be happy to help you. I'm Marianne Cockle, and I want to thank you for joining us today, Radio Free Palmer's Radio Book Club. Thank you, Carol and Sean, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thank you.